Welcome to episode 20 of Old Stories, New Information. I'm your host, Brent Colley, and on today's episode, I'm joined by Bruce Nelson. So welcome back, Bruce.
Thanks, Brent.
So this is a discussion that we've had before, but you know, it was really your recent article in the Eastern Courier that triggered like so many memories of mine, but also so many wows. So what triggered you to write the ever-changing world of employment article?
Well, it's basically artificial intelligence. There's been so much talk about artificial intelligence of late, of all the dangers to it, but it's, a lot of people are really concerned about the number of jobs that are going to change, and jobs that are currently done by people will be done by machines and will be handled by robots and artificial intelligence. And just thinking back, it seems to me like all through the, particularly the last 125 or 30 years, technology has created a lot of new jobs and put a lot of displaced a lot of other people that had jobs for a great number of years.
No, and so that's so true. I mean, I just did an episode with Mike Allen. He was talking about how now even lighthouses are going to be automated, and it's just the way things have been going. But your article really kind of made me smile because you had so many things that, you know, as a historian, you see like the Iceman, you know, the coal delivery, the milkman, and
well, we're going for a walk. I go for a walk every morning for about 2 miles, and it's during that time that my mind gets going and thinking about some of the stuff. So I started to just think about the number of jobs that have been lost over the last 125 years. And when I got home, I started to write things down, and I came up with over 70 jobs that were, you know, have been lost. So I thought, well, let's take some of the ones that are, you know, more important ones than that people will know about and write an article about it. So we started, you know, basically back around jobs that were prevalent in the first half of the 20th century. And one of them was the Iceman. Before there was refrigeration, they would cut ice from the ponds during the winter and put them in insulated houses and keep ice houses and then distribute the ice throughout the year. And there was always a guy who went around through most towns and was called the Iceman. He would have a horse-drawn wagon with blocks of ice in it. And there was actually signs that people would put in their windows, and it would be either 5, 10, 25, or 50. And that's how big the ice block that they wanted at the time. And the guy would chisel off that much ice and bring it into the house. So he said he's a guy, once refrigeration started to come along in the 20s, that job went away. You know, and then we had talked about in an earlier episode about how coal had powered about 75% of America back around the turn of the century. And during that period of time, a lot of the new houses that were being built started to put central heat in. So they put in steam heat, hot water heat, or even sometimes hot air heat, but it was usually powered by coal. So coal had to be delivered to each one of the houses. So it was fairly labor-intensive. Again, started off in wagons and then went to trucks. So you had a couple of guys that were, you know, going around and shoveling coal into the coal chutes, into the basements of each house so they could power the furnaces before oil and electricity came along and took over that particular job. And again, with coal, the early locomotives all ran on coal. And I think it was about 1910, there were 75,000 men employed by the railroads that did nothing but shovel coal into the locomotives. So when those oil came along and diesel fuel came along and started to replace the coal, 75 guys had to look for a new job.
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of
75,000 men is quite a bit.
Right, especially when you go back that far. I mean, the country was about half the size of the population. And then it's gotten, you know, go a little bit closer to our times. And the first modern job that I can really remember that we lost when supermarkets came along and convenience stores came along, and they started to bottle milk, or not bottle milk, but package milk in these cardboard cartons. So they weren't using the glass bottles anymore. They needed to be recycled. But everybody had a milkman, you know, and I think you and I talked about it. The milkman was almost like part of the family.
And everyone knew it was like 2 degrees of separation, somebody who was a milkman.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, my own dad, for a while, after he got out of the service, in the mornings, he worked as a mechanic, but in the mornings he went and he picked up milk and then brought it to the processing plants. But, you know, at the time, everybody got their milk delivered at least two or three times a week, sometimes every day, depending on how big the family was. And the milk was either left on a back stoop or, like our house, the milkman would walk right in the house and put it in the refrigerator. And sometimes my mom would give him a cup of coffee.
No, I love it. And we had one of our local, you know, deliverers, you know, of all these different things, like, used horses. And I always asked my grandfather, like, why did they use horses and not trucks when trucks were available? And he said, simple, the horses knew the route. So all the new employee needed to do was get into the wagon, and the horse would stop at the house that he needed to deliver to. And I thought, okay, that makes total sense.
Yeah, it was really amazing. The horses, they had been doing the job for so long, they did exactly that. The horse knew exactly where to stop. You didn't have to tie him up. He just left him there while he took the milk in and came back out. You know, and then they came along with these Divco company, came along with these delivery trucks. And one pedal on the floor operated the brake, the clutch, and the gas. And don't ask me how that worked, but I mean, it's really strange. But the guy could actually stand up, you know, support himself with one foot and use the other foot on the pedal and drive the truck. But I said that was
scary.
Those trucks were made specifically for doing stuff like delivering milk.
Huh.
You know, and then the other thing we talked about this the other day was gas station attendants. Before there was self-service gas, you would go into a gas station and there'd be two, sometimes three guys come out and surround your car. One guy would pump the gas. One guy would open the hood and check the oil and check your fan belts. Other guy was washing your windshields and checking your wiper blades. They were always trying to sell you something, which kind of made sense. If there was three guys working and gas was 30 cents a gallon, pretty hard to pay three guys to do that. So they were always trying to sell you fan belts or, you know, they would top off your radiator and top off your batteries because they didn't have sealed batteries in the day. So I said when they came along with the ability to put credit cards into gas pumps and everybody started to pump their own gas, those jobs all disappeared.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I remember just not too long ago going down through the Jersey Turnpike and, you know, I never got out for gas, and this is probably the late 90s.
I don't know if New Jersey still does it, but New Jersey was the last state to, they required a person to pump your gas. You couldn't pump your gas by yourself in New Jersey.
Yeah.
But I believe that that may have changed. But I said you also generally, you know, it would cost you more money to get gasoline there, too.
Yeah, no doubt. And then you had to tip the guy.
Yeah.
The other thing that you mentioned was the cigarette companies, tobacco companies. Like, that's something that we don't really see in the present day. But that was a big thing back then.
Well, it was tremendous. There was, I think there was about 60% of the male population, I think, were users of tobacco in one form or another, either smoking cigars, smoking cigarettes, chewing tobacco, or smoking a pipe. And there was a time when you would go to a restaurant, any of the larger restaurants, you would go in there, and there would be a woman walking around, generally in somewhat of a provocative outfit, with a tray hung around her neck, and she was selling cigarettes, cigars, and matches and stuff like that. So when they started to outlaw smoking in some of these restaurants, you know, again, that's another job that went away. And most larger restaurants, and particularly nightclubs at the time, and we don't really have nightclubs as such so much anymore, but you would go in, and there'd be at least two or three girls going around all night long selling tobacco and cigarettes and stuff like that. And then the
matchboxes were always, like, you know, where the matches, that was a big thing. Like, I remember, like, a whole collection of match, you know, whatever you want to call them, at my grandparents' house, where they collected wherever they went. You know, everyone, it was kind of like a business card in a way.
Yeah, I collected matchbooks for all, when I traveled all across the country in my younger days. You know, I would have a couple of snifters just full of matches, and every restaurant produced their own matches. It was kind of like today when, you know, you go to a business office and they hand you a pen. Well, they would hand you a pack of matches because everybody used them. You know, and then connected to, you know, again, we're talking about restaurants and places like that, is they had hat check girls and coat checks, but particularly hats, because men wore hats up until the 1950s. And then in the 1950s, that started to drop off, I think primarily when men started suburban areas, men were commuting by car. And so you couldn't put a hat on and get in a car. You had to take your hat off when you get in the car because the ceiling started to get lower and stuff like that. But he said as men stopped wearing hats, the hat check girls went away.
Huh. Yeah, then you had, but the coat check didn't really go away until just recent times for some reason.
Right. You know, and then, again, back in the day, every drugstore and a lot of the even supermarkets, not supermarkets, but stores like Walmart's and Woolco's, I mean, I got to go back far enough, Woolco's and places like that, Woolworth's, they had soda fountains in there. So there was guys that were, you know, making ice cream sandwiches in for you and, you know, making ice cream sodas and stuff like that. And those jobs have all gone away, too.
Yeah, the guy, there's like the soda jerk. What a great name.
Yeah, it's not so much he was a jerk. It was that's he got the nickname because that's how they filled the soda things. They would pull a handle, so they would jerk it towards them. That's what the name jerk came from, not because they were idiots.
No. But no, and they were just as popular as like bartenders are, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and then, you know, before we went to everything is digital today, when newspapers were produced, typesetters, that was a huge, huge number of guys who worked in there. I'm looking at a picture right now that they're just setting probably about 7 or 8 or 10 pages, and there's a typesetter for each one of the pages. And back in the day, they used to produce, most towns would produce, bigger towns would produce newspapers that would sometimes have as many as 3 and 4 different editions a day. And when you think about it, every single word had to be laid out and typed manually. I mean, what an intensive job that was.
Yeah, you would have to have, like, intense focus. And then you really needed to care about what you were doing. Because if you had just one individual who didn't care, the paper would be, you know, would lose value. I mean, and to do it multiple times a day, I mean, I look at people that make newspapers today, and they're digital, and I don't know how they do it.
No, it's all digital. Today, you lay out your type, just type it out, and you put how big a piece of paper you want to put on or how big your column inches is, and it'll automatically, you know, make the type fit. Because when you read today's newspapers, you'll see that certain lines have a little bit more space in between the letters than or between the words than other do. But back in the day, they had to do all that manually. And just the thought of being able to lay that out and lay out the pictures for all the ads that went in the thing. And there was a time limit that they had to do this in. I mean, to me, it's just that was a really intense job.
No, it was, you know, just because I'm a Mark Twain guy, but that's where he started. He was a typesetter for his brother. That's kind of, maybe they say that's how he was so good with words.
Well, that's how he lost all his money too. He decided to go into this modern modern system of a typesetter that he invested all his money in, and it didn't work. It only worked half the time.
Yeah, that was the old page. Yes, he was a good writer, but a bad investor.
A total terrible businessman. You know, and then
but the other
today,
thing too, that you got me thinking about in discussing this, and in the article, is that also newspaper delivery is so different now too. You know, I don't see many people getting their newspaper delivered every morning anymore. And
well, you used to have, not only was your newspaper delivered, usually, you know, when we were kids, it was usually by kids. You know, we were newspaper boys, and we all went around and delivered our newspapers before we went to school. But again, you go back in the day, and you would see a kid on every corner, street corner in the city, hawking newspapers. It wasn't just, you know, once in a while, but you could stand in the middle of an intersection and there'd be 4 kids, one on each corner, you know, selling newspapers, and they were making a pretty good living doing that.
But that's all gone away. Now people just get up, go online, and they get whatever news they want, and they can even pinpoint what they want each topic to be.
Well, we both know. I mean, we both write for a couple of papers. I write for a digital one as well as one that's in print. And the ones that are in print have a very difficult time surviving because it's to sell advertising. Everything is so instantaneous today that, you know, newspaper business is pretty much, it hasn't closed up. The news business hasn't closed up, but the printing newspapers, there's very few towns anymore that actually print their own paper because they just can't. They can't survive.
Yeah, no, it's unfortunate. I mean,
another job that there used to be hundreds and hundreds of people working in were the telephone industry. You had hundreds of operators. I don't even know today if you press the little button on your phone that says zero if you get an operator.
It's mostly all digital, or like you said at the beginning, AI. And that's pretty much
right. The
walking through and phone, all the issues you may have, and then they'll deliver you to a real person if the AI finally says, okay, I can't help this person.
Right. But when they first started, the phone business first started, everything was done by switchboards, so you needed an operator in there that actually plug one phone into another phone and to make a long-distance call. I remember when I was young, if you wanted to call your grandmother in Pennsylvania, you would call a long-distance operator, and then she would call you back when she made all the connections, because sometimes it would take her 10 or 15 minutes to connect through different lines to be able to get to the party you wanted to talk to. And I said when they came out with electronic switching probably in the 50s, again, those jobs went away. You can't even find a public telephone anymore today, a place where you put the coins in and call somebody. Again, that was another job that people don't even think about. It is somebody had to go around to every one of those payphones and take the coins out every day. So that's another job that went away. Telephone installation people. Those guys to all install, not cable TV so much anymore, but internet and stuff like that. But there's no more landlines going in most houses.
No, it's all. I'm the same way. If I lose power, I lose everything. You know. But yeah, the when my kids saw, you know, we used to sit by the payphone, and they're like, "What does that mean?" It's like, well, it was a phone, and you put coins in it. But if you didn't have coins, then you would make a collect call, or no, it wasn't a collect call. But it was you could call, and then the people on the other side would agree to a pay to receive your.
Yeah, that was a collect call. I mean, would call, and you couldn't talk to the person until the operator said, "You know, are you willing to pay for this telephone call to the person that was receiving it?"
No,
and heaven help you if they decided they didn't want to pay for the call, you didn't get to talk to them.
Yeah, then you get to talk to them. It was just my favorite is we used to, as kids, in high school, to know where the party was on Saturday night. We'd sit up on Redding Ridge and we'd wait for the phone to ring, and they would call that number and okay, you're going to Timmy's house. He's having a party. Just be safe getting here. And the local police officer was obviously just down the road waiting for the whole stream of cars to come flying by, and he just followed us, and the party was over.
Well, I know. There was a time that, if your parents wanted, if you're going into a different community or something like that, your parents will call me and let me know if you get there safe. And you would have a thing and say, okay, well, I would call and I would say, I'm calling collect. It's Joe calling collect. And they would say, well, no, we don't want to accept the call. But they knew that you got there because Joe was calling collect.
They didn't want to pay, yeah, but they knew.
Yeah, so they didn't have to pay anything. And it was always around everything.
No, there's so many different things.
Times haven't changed that much. Yeah. Everybody's got some way to, get around what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, no, now it's all different. I can't wait for your next article, because we had that picture, that great picture of that guy with all the different things around him that's now all in your phone. It's wild.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing, is all the stuff that's in your phone.
Run by apps.
Right. Everything's run by apps. But jobs, again, they're going away. Elevator operators. When was the last time you got in an elevator and the guy would ask you what floor you wanted to go to, and at the time they would have it looked like those old ships accelerators or whatever you want to call it, the thing you would put the power to the ship.
They would put it one way or the other
to make the elevator go up and go down, and he would have to manually stop it at the floors. They didn't automatically stop at the floors, and they also didn't have doors that opened automatically. They had a steel gate that he would pull across to keep you in, because the doors on each one of the floors would open. When they got to the floors, they would get to the floor, and then they would have to open those doors too. So there's two sets of doors. Today, all that stuff's automatic.
No, and he had to be talented. It wasn't like he had to know exactly where to stop.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't that you just didn't push a button, and it didn't push a button to the floor. he had to manually stop it when he got to the floor and make sure that it was lined up so that you could get off without tripping and falling or yeah. stepping down.
So, and then you had, you brought forth the Shoeshine Boys. That was
right.
everywhere.
Shoeshines, you couldn't go to a hotel, and all the large hotels, every airport, every train station, every bus station. And most of the times you'd walk down the streets and there'd be two or three places on most heavily traveled streets in front of a store where there would be a shoeshine guy. And they would have a set of chairs that sat up high so that the shoeshine guy didn't have to bend over. He could just reach over and shine your shoes. But it was a great place to people watch, and it was a great place to learn what was going on in the community. It's kind of like the old barber shops where right. people would go in and just do a lot of talking and learn what was going on in the town. But again, lots of people made their living shining people's shoes. And then you also had people that repaired shoes. Again, there's not too many shoe shops around anymore that put on heels and put on soles and stuff like that. And that was very commonplace when everybody had leather shoes. The shoes would wear out, and instead of just, today we live in a throwaway society. Back then, they would, reheel the shoe or put a new sole on it.
Yeah, the last one I remember locally up here in the northwest corner was in Torrington, and I don't think that's even there anymore. But
No, that was the big thing.
I remember those all over the place.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything's automated now. Everything has to do with computers. I mean, when I booked my honeymoon, it was through an agent. That doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, my wife was a travel agent for a while, and when she first went there, that's the only way you could buy your airline tickets. You bought them through a travel agent. If you wanted to go on a cruise or plan a vacation, you had a travel agent make your bookings for your rental car and stuff like that. Again, today you do it all on an app on your phone. I remember one of the first things that my wife, part of their job that went away was the airlines just all of a sudden in unison got together and decided that they were only going to pay $10 commission no matter how expensive the flight was. So you had to book a lot of flights to make a decent living after that. Before, it was a percentage of whatever the cost of the flight was. They said there's just so many jobs that went away. And I think that, we're worried about the jobs that we're going to lose to artificial intelligence. But when you look back, I don't know that we necessarily should worry, because we've replaced all the jobs that we've just talked about in the last 15 or 20 minutes, and people are still working. They're just doing different things than what they were doing before. So maybe in 100 years we look back and say AI was the worst thing, or maybe we look back and say it was the best thing. So, but you and I are not going to have to worry about it.
No, but it's just, I've played with it. What I find with AI, especially if you're looking to write something, you got to know exactly the topic, the real information that you're looking for to test it, because you can type in anything in AI, and sometimes it's very helpful. But if you type in something that you're well aware of, and then, like I did Mark Twain, of course, so what came back to me was not correct. So that's the danger, is that people presuming that what they type in is going to be exact. And I think what's going to actually happen with AI is that you'll have specific databases to pull the data from in order to make it legitimate and helpful information. That's the only thing I can think of that will make it valuable to the present day.
Well, you're always going to need humans to check to make sure that the information that they're getting is correct, because this is, you and I are, as historians, know this all the time, that a historian, someone who is well thought of, says something, and if they happen to be wrong, all of a sudden that becomes fact. And it's really difficult. It's real easy for people to accept something, but it's really difficult to get it changed when they find out that it's wrong.
Once it's out there, it's out there, and it's like damage control, but it's never going to be fixed. I mean, that's the unfortunate part. If they see it in print or they see it on a site, that's why these sites are fact-checked. Everything's fact-checked now. And but maybe those facts are correct. Maybe they're not. We don't know. But because a fact-check site did it, then it's like, oh, that's the truth. Maybe it's not. And that's the danger.
Yes,
but, yeah, these AI, like you can use AI now to make any picture of anything you want. Obviously, you've seen my talent in Photoshop. I can put anyone in any picture. It's fun, but it's damaging as well.
It's also dangerous, my friend.
Exactly. So, yeah, you don't know anymore, but it's all technology. But, no, I think, this is a great topic, Bruce, and I'm glad you wrote that article. And what's fun about it for me is that everywhere I go now, I see it. Like, I went to McDonald's. I haven't been to McDonald's in a long time. And, you know, I was trying to get an order in, but they're like, no, you got to use the kiosk. I'm like, but you're here behind the counter. I just need to tell you what. No, they're like, no, you got to use the kiosk. And I was like, okay. And then I order it, and then they said, you know, before you got here, you could have used your phone and used our app. And I was like, wow, okay. That's where we're at.
We live in a changing world, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, all right. So thanks for being here, Bruce. Always a pleasure. A lot of fun.
My pleasure.
And so this is episode 20. So I'm glad that it was you that did it with me. And we'll see what happens from here. So as we've noted on all episodes, there's an email account that you write to, stories@robinhoodradio.com. And you can tell us what you want to hear more about. And, you know, we'd like that. So help us help you with history that you want to hear, you know, in the future. So until next time, be well, always do right, because this will gratify some people and astonish the rest. Enjoy your week.
Old Stories, New Information with Brent Colley is produced at the studios of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.